In one of those interesting and happy little coincidences, the lesson I have tonight meshes very well with what Tim spoke about today, as we'll see when we look at some of the passages that I have for us to examine tonight. I call it another look at the Golden Rule. The Golden Rule is recognized by many as the most perfect of moral codes found in all the world. Most cultures have some version of what they would call a golden rule, but we will see as we go through that their versions of it typically pale in comparison. It is difficult for the human mind to even contemplate a higher moral code and moral teaching than Christ gave us here in Matthew 7 and 12. I'm going to begin with verse 7. Ask and it will be given to you. And of course, this was part of the Sermon on the Mount, so-called. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds. And to him who knocks, it will be opened. For what man is there among you who, if his son asks for bread, would give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? And then in verse 12, therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. As we'll see, he's basically saying, all of the moral teachings, all of the instructions in the old law can be basically summed up in this one verse. So what a jewel for us. Most of us, if we've had any religious teaching growing up, we've learned it as do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. And it's certainly a good paraphrase of this verse. But we want to go a little bit deeper into it tonight. And what I'd like for us to take away from it is less of the theoretical and more of the practical. How can you and I use this teaching in our daily lives to improve not only our own moral standing, but improve the lives of all with whom we have opportunity to do so? That's what we'd like to see tonight. Christ's teaching in the early part of the Sermon on the Mount, and we won't read it tonight, but in Matthew 5, verses 20 through 48, Jesus taught a standard of righteousness there that contrasted with what the scribes and the Pharisees taught. And over and over, Jesus would say, you have heard that, for example, thou shalt not commit adultery. And he says, I say unto you, you know, a man that looketh after a woman to commit adultery or with her has committed adultery in his heart. So over and over again, he takes some of the teachings of the old law, but he puts his, we would say today, his spin upon those teachings and in fact decrees what the spirit, not only the text, but the spirit of those laws should be. He shows that it was actually in harmony with what the law actually revealed. He's saying here, I believe, that this one rule in the 12th verse of chapter 7, the so-called golden rule. Now let me just mention as a paraphrase, the term golden rule doesn't appear in the scripture. But it is so universally used to apply to this verse that as a shorthand tonight, I'll take the privilege, if you will, to use that myself. This one rule, he says, summarizes what the law and the prophets were all about. Very similar to what Paul said, love your neighbor as yourself, summed up the law according to him, as recorded in Romans 13, verses 8 and 10. So there's a lot of teaching in the Old Testament. We know the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not commit adultery. All of these were guidelines on how we should treat our neighbor. And then he said, Jesus here in verse 12 of chapter 7 is basically saying, in this verse lies all of the law and the prophets. The golden rule, the most sublime guide for living of all time. I think the deeper we get into this study, not only tonight, obviously, but in our entire life. I think we'll see it is the essence of Christian living upon the earth. It is so difficult that I don't know anyone in my young years. I'm only 19. You're not buying that. Okay. Now, but in my years, I've never seen anyone that perfectly lived up to it. Now, I have seen people, known people, some close to me, that I think have come, you know, as close as a human almost could possibly do in living this rule. Their entire life was consumed with how can I help others. But it is a guide. It is the sublime guide for living of all time. It is the standard, I believe, that for which we must seek. But few of us, if any, would ever actually reach the carrying out the practice of it. It represents what I say the ideal model for treatment of all other humans during our entire lifetime. We can measure our own faith, I believe, along with this, on how we love God and how we love our fellow man. And in fact, Jesus says this. He says, love God with all your heart, mind, body, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. And the commandment to love your neighbor, I think, is even expanded in 7 and 12 in the so-called Golden Rule. Other moral codes, while sometimes lofty, just simply cannot measure up to this code that was given by Christ Himself. We see that all cultures have them. There was a code, so to speak, in Hammurabi's code that went back some 2,000 years B.C. There are moral codes in Confucianism. We're going to see some of that. There were moral codes in the ancient Greek culture, in the ancient Chinese culture with Confucius and so. And we're going to look at those a little bit and compare them to what Jesus gives to us here in Matthew 7 and 12. Some corruptions of the rule. Now see if you recognize any of these. One is, do unto others before they do unto you. Now that is a very negative view of the world. It's like everybody's out there is out to get me. I am going to get them before they can get me. That is what we would call the preemptive strike. You know, I'm going after the jugular before they can do it unto me. And I'm going to tell you, there are people in business, Mark and I were talking earlier today, there are people in business that think like this. They have, they're suspicious of you and everyone else, and they live their life with this suspicion and this idea that the world is plotting against them, and if they're going after you before you can do anything unto them. Another corruption of the rule. Do unto others as they do unto you. Now look at that. That sounds really good, doesn't it? It says, this is while the other one was, the first one was preemptive. I'm striking first. This one is what? Reactive, isn't it? Meaning, I am going to treat you according to the way in which you treat me. Now, if that were true, and we see that it's easy to be good to those who are good to us, correct? And I think Tim said in his sermon today, it's easy to love lovable people. Now, we're lovable people in here tonight. We love each other. There's a lot of love in here tonight. A lot of hugging, a lot of handshaking, a lot of wishing well. That's easy to do among lovable people, isn't it? But you get in my face, you lie about me, you slander me, I'm coming after you, you know. Do unto others as they do unto you has a negative standpoint, could also be the positive. You treat me well, I'll treat you well. Then it basically does what? It gives us the motive, correct, for the behavior we're going to show toward other people. You're good to me, I'll be good to you. You think any marriages ever operate on that? Any marriages ever operate on that philosophy? Yeah. You treat me nice, I'll treat you. Joe, you're laughing too hard. Sandy's not here. You treat me nice, I'll treat you nice. Now, you treat me poorly, I can be real cold, can't I? I can be that icy fish for the next 3 or 4 days, and we'll see how you like that. So it's a reactive rule. Now, there's one other one. Do unto others if they do unto you. Very similar to number two. But once again, some people will just ignore you. But if they have any dealings with you at all, and they deal favorably with you, then once again, you can deal favorably with them. Somebody at work, for example, they may ignore you for months. And then finally, they might say one nice thing to you. Now you say, well, I'm obligated to say something nice about them. You know, those are nice combat boots you got on there. Or, you know, I really like those fatigue jackets you wear to work. But it's a reciprocal. It's a reactive rule rather than the proactive. Keep that in mind. These are basically preemptive or reactive relations with other people. Other rules and other cultures. Now, we'll look at some actual examples from history. These are negative versions. And again, on the surface, they appear lofty. It basically, you could sum them up by saying this. Do not do things to others that you would not wish for them to do to you. Sounds like a really good rule, doesn't it? And it really, I mean, it is. We would teach children. I'll bet you Sean Brown has taught kids. Sean Brown probably got into their face and went something like this. Amanda, do you want her taking your lunch? Or do you want her breaking in line? And the man is going, no. See, and it's a rule that we see all through our culture. It's a rule that says, if you don't want somebody doing it to you, then don't do it to them. And it's an operating rule, and it's very common, as we've all seen. And these rules from other cultures and civilizations that we're going to talk about could generally be summarized with that phrase. Do not do things to others that you would not wish for them to do to you. It's a pretty good operating rule. For example, Pithecus in ancient Greece said, do not to your neighbor what you would take ill from him. Meaning, if you think that this is not a good thing that someone would do to you, then don't do it to them. Thales, another Greek philosopher, says, avoid doing what you would blame others for doing. Are you with me? It's a very negative version of what some people would call, you know, a golden rule. It's at best, it's not even a close silver. We might give it a bronze, all right? It may be a good bronze rule. Isocrates, do not do to others what would anger you if done to you by others. Again, a negative version of the so-called golden rule. And last, you've heard of Plato. One should never do wrong in return, nor mistreat any man, no matter how one has been mistreated for him. Now, before you came in here tonight, wouldn't you agree that that's a fairly lofty rule for living? Don't do something to somebody else that you're going to take ill or you're going to blame others for doing to you. If that were followed, would this not be a better world? I believe it would. Would not people in business get along better and not be doing things, not cheating and lying and stealing and all those things that you see in business, same way within schools, same way within marriages? So it is a lofty rule, but it doesn't approach the perfection of what Jesus gave in Matthew 7:12. Well, I want to tread this a little bit further. You've heard of Confucius, a man lived in China about 600 BC. Zhi Gong, I don't know who he was. He was just in the script here. But he asked, saying, is there one word which may serve as a rule of practice for all one's life? The master here is Confucius, said, is not reciprocity such a word? Had to go look that up, right? Reciprocity, another word just for reciprocate, isn't it? You treat me well, I'll treat you well. You do me poorly, then I'm more or less justified in treating you poorly. Confucius also said, never impose on others what you would not choose for yourself. The golden rule, however, as we turn to what it is, I believe, we see that Jesus' teaching in Matthew 7:12 and repeated elsewhere is very comprehensive. Hard to contemplate a more comprehensive rule than what he gave us. First of all, he says all things whatsoever. So it's all actions. You know, it's all thought. It's all ways in which that we can treat and deal with our fellow man. If there is anything, and I think that's wrapped up in whatsoever, if there's anything we would want that men should do to us, it becomes our duty to do it to them. So things, obviously, like respect. You want people to respect you? You must respect them. You want people to be kind to you, to be generous, patient, to be courteous, then we have to proactively treat others in the same way. And consider Philippians 2 and 3, 4, you know, in how we deal with our other people. You got it. The golden rule is also an introspective rule. And it's preparing this lesson tonight. This is probably, you know, so much of life is simple, but it has to hit me between the eyes before I really see it. To exercise the golden rule, we can't go through life just reacting to what occurs in our life. The golden rule to be applied requires us to look within ourselves and to be what we call introspective and ask the question, how can I treat that person proactively in a way in which I also would want to be treated? So the golden rule, I'll show it in a moment, step five, is active. It is proactive. It acts before and not in consequence of the actions of other people. The golden rule is an introspective rule. All things whatsoever ye would, that's part of it. Living by the golden rule requires that we examine our own hearts. Reference 2 Corinthians 13:5. Examine yourselves whether be in the faith. The unexamined life is not worth living, and the unexamined life will not get us to heaven. We cannot be like a leaf on the river floating down the river of life. I guess I've mixed my metaphors. But the leaf floating on the river of life, just taking whatever comes and reacting to it as it comes. That's not God's way. That's not God's way. The golden rule here for action is introspection. And we have to examine ourselves. Are we living toward our neighbor, toward our husband, toward our wife, toward those pupils in school, toward our friends, toward our brethren? Are we proactively trying to seek their own good, or simply reacting to their actions toward us? Number three, the golden rule is a universal rule. And that's what makes it useful to us. All things whatsoever ye would that men should do unto you. Now men here, you know it's a general term, including those of all sexes, male and female, all character, all races and religions. No one, whether friend or enemy, is excluded. Galatians 6:10. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good, what? And to all men, but especially those, what? Of the household of faith. Yes, we owe special allegiance to our brethren. Yes, we owe priority treatment to our brethren. But as we have opportunity, we are to do good unto all men of all character, race, religion, cultures, and so on. That's why it's so tough. Oh, it's tough. As Tim was mentioning today, it is tough to love some people in some cultures who, for example, hate us today and really wish us evil. Would love to see us, people like us, being wiped off the face of the earth. Hard to love them. The golden rule, as I've mentioned probably four times already, is an active rule. Do ye even so to them. Therefore, whatsoever ye would that men do unto you, do even so to them. In advance of them doing it, friends and fellow Christians, in advance of them doing it to us, we are to do it to them. The golden rule requires action on our part, not just feelings. Not just saying, as the case in James there, where, you know, someone comes in without clothing, without food, and we say, oh, be warmed and feel. Oh, I feel really sorry for that person. But that's the extent of it. I'm going to feel sorry for the person, not going to do anything for them. It is not enough to merely be sympathetic to or feel an interest in others. And in number five, the golden rule is an all-inclusive rule. He says, for this is, Jesus says, the law and the prophets. Jesus' words point out that whatever the law would compel a man to do, his love would have caused him to do it anyway. You see that? When Jesus says, you know, if a man compel you to go a mile, then go with him the second mile. You know, figurative, perhaps even literally. Again, when we get deep into this so-called golden rule, it is staggering to the extent to which we must give ourselves up to it. It is obviously self-sacrificial. It is obviously as unselfish as any rule you can even conceive of. It says, I'm not waiting for someone to do either good or evil to me. I'm not going to be reactive. I am going to be proactive and ask myself, what can I do for that person for their own, for their good? Because, why? That's the way I would want to be treated. Well, a couple of quick illustrations. Certainly the Good Samaritan in Luke 10:25. You remember that. The Levite, or the man was beaten, left on the side of the road near death. A Levite goes past, a priest goes past, people that you would expect to show some pity. But the one who helped him was the Samaritan, wasn't he? One who in better times that Jewish man would have probably refused even contact with, much less assistance. The Samaritan could not gain from helping the man, did not want to gain from helping the man. The man was helpless and could not help himself. And it was the Samaritan that came in and gave the help. Notice how there are similarities with that and obviously what Christ has done for us. From Romans 5:6-11, for when we, that is us, all people, we were still without strength in due time, Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man would one die, yet perhaps for a good man someone would even dare to die. But God demonstrates His own love toward us in that while we were still sinners, and I might interject, lost in our sin, totally helpless in terms of helping ourselves toward salvation, Christ died for us. He proactively died for us, not because we loved Him, not because of anything we could do or did do for Him. It is a perfect illustration of what I've been trying to show is the so-called golden rule. Much more than having now been justified by His blood, we should be saved from wrath through Him. For when we were enemies, we were not just passive. He says we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of His Son. Much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by His life. Not only that, but we also rejoice in God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have now received recognition. Do you see the point? That it was not because of anything we had done for Him. It may be in anticipation of our response to love Him, follow Him, give our lives to Him, but it's not because we had done that already. And in fact, He died for us when we were helpless in sin and totally incapable of helping ourselves. An important conclusion, I believe. In Christ's love for mankind, He acted not as a consequence of the good actions or intentions of people on His behalf. Rather, Christ acted from a standpoint of, my words, pure love for people, that's us, who could not act for themselves to merit their own salvation. In that sense, Christ mirrored the actions of the Good Samaritan who saved a helpless man who in better conditions may have refused contact with the Samaritan. The Good Samaritan's actions were also out of, again, my words, pure love, simply to be good, to do good for the man, not wanting anything in return, and therefore I think is a great example of the golden rule. Now, many of us go through life constantly taking the measure of others and acting accordingly to them, toward them, in a reciprocal fashion. We do it all the time. I do it, you do it, let's face up. I am so often judging my actions on what other people have done for me, said about me, treated me, etc. And I'm going to give some just examples here. You will not believe what she said to me. I'll just avoid her as much as possible. Now, she may have had a really bad day, bad hair day. She may have said something that she didn't mean, or you took out of context, but here we are going to determine the rest of our life on earth together by a chance statement that she may have said. Well, he walked right past me today without speaking. He must think he is something. I'd like to see him taken down a notch or two. You ever seen that? Now, if you dug into it, you might learn that he just received a phone call that his young daughter was taken to the emergency room. But he walked right past you. You see that? And we make these snap judgments and determine from that point on how we're going to treat other people. And how often are we wrong? Once we do get to know someone, inevitably we find out that, hey, he's a great guy. Might be a little goofy, whatever, but man, he's got great thoughts, he's got great talent, he's a loving person, he'd give you the shirt off your back, but we make these surface and instantaneous judgments about people that can determine the way we're going to treat them for the rest of our lives. Ever heard this one? I'm so upset with my husband. He pays me little attention and never appreciates anything I do for him. Let's see how he takes it when I ignore him for the next few days. See that? That's a reactive, negative, you know, and in many people would justify that. You get in a pity party with your best friend, and they say, right on, absolutely. Show him what it's like. Sleep on the couch for the next 4 days. You're going to find people that will encourage you in that response. But it's not what God wants. Yeah. Much of our action, many of our actions, are built, I believe, on guilt and leverage. Now, you know what guilt is. Let me just explain what leverage. Leverage says, if I do something good for someone else, it's going to help me. It's like prying with that lever, you know. I can use a very little lever here, just do very little work, and I can lift a car with the thing. It's called a jack, right? Or a seesaw. I can, somebody said, give me a lever long and a fork lever long enough and I can move the world with it. Just takes a little action and I'll get a lot in return. So something like this. We have simply got to invite them over for dinner. They have had us over twice and I feel terrible about it. So we do something good. We have them over. We feed them. We have feed and feed. Is the word fat feet? You don't know either. But we treat them very well, but it's really what? Out of a sense of duty, out of a sense of accomplishment. Is it good that it's done? Well, yeah, you can argue. I'm just saying it doesn't measure up to the standard of Jesus' golden rule. Another one. It's really not my job. But I'll work late anyway and complete it. That will really embarrass Susan, since it was her job to complete, and that serves her right. Now, you may get praise and kudos for staying late and getting the work done. And Susan, you know, might be diminished in return. But we're doing a good thing, we're doing the work, but for the wrong reasons, for the wrong motive. And the last one, a young son or daughter might say, I don't want to do this project for school, but Mom will be furious if I don't. So I'll just do enough just to get her off my back. And we go through life with this kind of reasoning, what we call guilt and leverage. How do we know how others want to be treated? If we're going to apply the golden rule, and I'm a very simple guy, and I try to boil it down to simple things, we got to know what other people want. Some of these things are very obvious and intuitive. I don't want you stealing my stuff. I don't have much. I don't want you stealing my stuff, so I'm not going to steal yours either, right? I don't want you lying to me. I don't want you cheating and slandering me, so I will not do that either to you. I don't want to do threats or reprisals or physical harm or murder. But no, those are also encapsulated in the law, aren't they? All of those in the old law and various places within the New Testament too. So you certainly do not want to do things in that line, again, and from a negative standpoint. What we find is that nearly everyone, and I said, I hedged this a bit, nearly everyone, there can be some hardened criminals. There can be some Muammar Gaddafis that this probably would not apply to. But virtually all of the people you and I are going to associate with on a day-to-day basis are going to want these things, as do you. One is appreciation. Do you want to be appreciated? I do. So you know that others do. So one thing we can clearly do is show appreciation. Please, thank you. I really appreciate all you do. And when do you get tired of that? You never get tired of it. So don't stop doing it for others. Showing appreciation for that husband, for that wife, for that spouse, for that friend who's there for you. Affiliation. This is belonging. We all want to belong. And when we reach the point that we don't feel we belong, terrible things can result. And I don't mean having lunch with 1,000 of your closest friends. It doesn't take that much. In some cases, one good friend, one good person that you can rely on will mean the world to that person. You may mean nothing to a lot of people, but you may mean everything to someone. And so this simple words like, I am so glad to be with you. I am so glad to see you again. And to show this affiliation and belonging. You know that you want that. You know that others do. And then autonomy. You want your independence. I do not tell Faye how to cook dinner. That is her deal. And bad things would result if I come in and try to supervise that activity for her. Now, there are things that I do, and I feel the same way. I would not want her to come and try to supervise how I'm editing a book for work. She might come in and, you know, express some interest. But I don't want her saying, you know, I don't like that word right there. That phrase, you know. We would have trouble. This is the autonomy that all of us want. You want it? I want it. Everybody wants it. So let's respect the autonomy of all people. We all have a status. And it takes a great deal of humility to suppress that status. What is that status? It's the position you carry in life. You know, you're either the boss or an employee or a co-worker, and as we interact in life, we're constantly aware of that status, are we not? Are you going to talk the same way to a co-worker as you do to the top president of the company? Well, maybe not, because he or she has status, and they want some respect, if you will, for that status. It's really similar to the appreciation. But they want some acknowledgement of their status. You want it. I want it. Everyone wants it. So we can be sure that's an area to treat people well. And the last one I would say is role. Very similar to status, but this is your position in life. Now, the reality is that God has given the husband in the marriage the role of authority in that marriage. And I'm going to tell you, there are many women mentally, sometimes physically, educationally, could do a better job of managing things in the house from a management standpoint than the husband. That's the reality. I know some of them. Sharp folks, sharp ladies. But if they're going to be a Christian and they're going to do it God's way, they're going to acknowledge the status of the husband and the role of the husband and do everything within their power to support him and to make him better over the years that they have together. They're not going to begrudge him of that status and of that role, and they're certainly not going to spend their life criticizing him, but they will try to influence him and help him for the better as they both go forward in life. How do we apply the golden rule? Almost done. You start with love for all. Now that's hard too. Not just, and certainly not just affection. I can't have affection for Muammar Gaddafi, Idi Amin, Adolf Hitler, others that are just evil incarnate. I don't have affection for them. But this love, this agape love says, I do want the best for them. And ultimately, that's the salvation of their soul. Would I bet my next paycheck on that happening? Probably not. I'm not a betting man. But would I, you know, anticipate Muammar Gaddafi repenting of his sins and becoming a born-again Christian? Probably not. But that should be my desire for him. And if given an opportunity, I would not talk about the deployment of forces in the East with Muammar Gaddafi. If given the opportunity, I hope that I would say, Mr. Gaddafi, do you have a relationship with God and with Jesus Christ? And I could say that same to all. You see that? So that's a universal thing that I can do, wanting what's best for them. Second, we've got to realize our own shortcomings and failures. One of the main reasons we find fault in others is because we are blind to it within ourselves. Now, Jesus gave a almost humorous example on this, and you remember someone pointing out the splinter in someone else's eye when there's a beam in your own. I mean, it's humorous to even think about it. You know, this little mote, or really a splinter, little thing in it. You've got this splinter, and I'm sitting there with this giant pole stuck in my eye there. Humorous example, but until we realize that we are weak human beings, we are imperfect, and we should really go through life, when I get my life perfect, then I can stand to criticize yours. Think before we speak or act. Sometimes it just takes 5 seconds to consider what we're saying before we speak. How would I feel if someone did the same to me, spoke the same to me? You know, you can go through years of friendship with somebody and you can kill it like that with just one, you know, awful remark, hurtful remark, tacky remark. And in some cases, it's nearly impossible to repair the damage when that occurs, with a son, with a daughter, with a husband, with a wife, with your friend, with a brother in Christ. Let us be proactive in our good actions toward others. I hope I've made this point. If we're married and our husband or our wife is not what they should be, maybe they're not even Christians. Maybe they could care less about anything spiritual. And I've got to tell you, I was a product of that. My dad was not a Christian when I was growing up. My mother hauled 4 of us to church, in some cases riding the bus, walking a mile and getting a bus, riding 4 miles on that bus and transferring to another bus and finally getting it. It was a great day when a man who had a cleaner's truck and was a member of the church started coming by and bringing us and taking us to church services. And some of my earliest memories as a 6 and 7 year old sitting in the back with the clothes hanging up and smelling those dry cleaning chemicals. No air conditioning either in Memphis, Tennessee. But we went, and we were expected to go Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. So if you're married, how about if we act lovingly as if you are loved? You see? That's proactive. It's not saying, I'm going to treat my husband if he treats me well. The golden rule would say, I'm going to act toward him as if he loves me and I love him. I'll do my best to ignore the things that he says that are harmful because I respect him, love him as my husband. As an employee, what if we did our job even if others don't do theirs? Even if those around us are not living up to what they should, but we did in spite of that. Only good things could result from a life like that. The golden rule. This is the most sublime concept, and I'm going to close with this. This is some words from Adam Clark. He was a commentator from the 1700s, but a lot of good thought here. He says this is the most sublime precept and highly worthy of the grandeur and beneficence of the just God who gave it. The general meaning of it is this: guided by justice and mercy, Do unto all men as you would have them do to you, were your circumstances and theirs reversed. None but he whose heart is filled with love to God and all mankind can keep this precept, either in his spirit or letter. And I agree with that. Self-love will feel itself sadly cramped when brought within the limits of this precept. But God hath spoken it. It is the spirit and design of the law and the prophets, the sum of all that is laid down in the sacred writings relative to men's conduct toward each other. I think it's very rare when we can get a capsule of guidance in such a brief form, a guideline for life that says, I proactively speak and act toward others exactly the way I would want them to be treating me. And that's it. I think we have a song selected, Mark, and if you would lead us in that, please.